Taking a look now at the importance of you and me and every adult to fill out an advanced care plan. Larry Mueller here again. And we're going to be talking about advanced directives with a couple of guests for you today. Attorney Ben Adams is an advisor to the board of directors of the Elder Law and Special Needs section of the State Bar of Wisconsin. Ben Adams, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Larry, or good afternoon, almost. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for joining in. With us as well, Dr. Lee Vogel. Dr. Vogel is Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health and an Associate Professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Vogel, thank you for joining us.
Well, good morning, and I really appreciate being invited. Thank you.
So both Dr. Vogel and Ben are founding members of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership, and it's great to have them with us today. So I'm going to ask you, what advanced care planning have you done? Has planning ahead helped maybe in a health care situation? Love to hear from you. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email, the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Ben, let's start with you. What is advanced care planning and why is it legally necessary?
Thanks, Larry. Advanced care planning is crucial for adults in Wisconsin. Anyone who is 18 years or older, if they become incapacitated, either through an illness or an accident or injury, somebody needs to be able to step into their shoes and speak for them with respect to medical decision making. And Wisconsin does not have what's commonly known as a next of kin or surrogacy statute. So that means that my wife cannot step in to make my decisions unless I've appointed her in advance by signing a healthcare power of attorney that names her my agent. And if I haven't done that, the other option for my wife is to go to court when I'm incapacitated and try to become my legal guardian through a court proceeding.
Man. Dr. Vogel, why is, you know, from a medical standpoint, in your mind, why is it so important?
Well, you know, as a doctor, or even as a patient, which I am as well, you know, we day in and day out make decisions, you know, in a shared decision making between a doctor and a patient around all sorts of things, whether it be, you know, treating the common cold, helping somebody with COVID. But oftentimes we find ourselves in pretty critical situations where we wish we had had discussions about, you know, what somebody's wishes would be. What we do in healthcare is prolong life and reduce suffering and, you know, promote health. And sometimes we are in situations where promoting health or prolonging life may take quite a difficult turn in terms of the kinds of things we do to somebody and hopefully for somebody, and we need guidance. And so we want, you know, if you can't ever make that decision for yourself, you really want to have had the conversations with those you love and entrust to make the decisions for you when you can't speak.
Yeah, yeah. And last month, I think it was, Governor Evers proclaimed this week as Healthcare Decision Week. And What's the significance, Ben, of that action?
Thanks, Larry. This week is to celebrate the second of the crucial things that Benjamin Franklin pointed out are the only certain things in life, which are taxes and death. So now that we've completed our income tax concerns, 10 years ago or so, National Healthcare Decisions Day was inaugurated to make people think, yeah, I better do some planning for that time where I don't have my health the way I want it. And Dr. Vogel Lee is exactly right. It's not just filling out a document, which a lot of people in this effort try to focus on. It's also having those conversations with the person that you want to be not just an agent, but an advocate for your healthcare values at that time in the future.
I'm wondering, just as an aside, are other states, I don't know what's the word to use here. Are there more liberal readings of this in other states? Or, I mean, do most states require to have a designated person?
A lot of states, Larry, more often than not, they have a law that says your next of kin or those closest to you in a certain type of rank order can step in and be your decision maker without a document. But Wisconsin does not have that type of law. And even that law doesn't cover certain circumstances where you don't have next of kin, or you maybe are in a relationship that's not a husband and wife type relationship, or you have somebody that's been close to you for years, but you're not legally connected.
So what are there are many advanced directives, as I'm sure I understand. Let's talk about the different types.
There are lots of healthcare power of attorney forms or form documents that you can get. Some of the medical systems have their own. The state has a suggested form called the statutory power of attorney for healthcare document. All of them will be perfectly fine in any medical facility for the right purpose, as long as they're legally completed correctly. So you have to follow the guidelines. In Wisconsin, those documents are not notarized. They're witnessed by two witnesses. But in other states, a notary is either required or acceptable. So it's important to know that the document you're doing is correctly completed for Wisconsin law.
And in terms of the amount of effort that is involved, let's say the healthcare power of attorney.
Yes. A lot of considerations go into it, but there's a lot of free help that's available throughout the state, Larry. One of the documents that you have posted on your webpage for the show today gives virtually all of the local resources that people can reach out to get assistance to get this process started and completed. All of the healthcare systems in Wisconsin have resources for this. There are community groups like ours in the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Our group has free classes each week. There's a class for the public to come to and get this either started or pushed along or completed, and they can do it for free and really learn how they can get their questions answered along the way.
So here's another question. Does the power of attorney, there are powers of attorney and there's healthcare power of attorney. Are those, someone is a power of attorney over with someone else, does that mean they can also chime in on the healthcare part?
That's a great question, Larry, and there's an awful lot of confusion about the fact that there are power of attorneys for financial and legal matters, and then there are separately power of attorneys for healthcare. And in Wisconsin, it's rare to have a document that can allow you to do both. Generally speaking, you're wiser to have a separate financial power of attorney and a separate healthcare power of attorney document.
What are the and what age are we talking about here? Should we, be thinking about getting this done probably sooner than later?
I guess technically when somebody turns 18, when your children turn 18 and head off to what they're doing after high school, they're an adult. And if they end up in the hospital, and Lee Vogel can correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but if you're hospitalized and you're 18 or 19, even if your parent calls the hospital to ask if you're there, the hospital can't say that you are because it's private. It's protected.
Yeah. Dr. Vogel, you want to chime in too?
Yeah, I can emphasize that, with HIPAA and the need to respect people's privacy around their health information. If you don't have a document that clarifies that somebody can not only, speak for you, but it's also about learning about you. I think a couple things I wanted to emphasize about the legally part that Ben talked about is just making sure that, that people do understand that having it witnessed doesn't mean you have to have an attorney, just like you don't need a notary in Wisconsin. You don't need an attorney. We want it, I think, historically to make this a relatively easy thing to do. That being said, you know, doing it correctly and following the instructions is important so it doesn't get rejected by, you know, a health organization that's looking for formalities before they file it in your medical record, either hopefully electronically or otherwise. And that's the other thing is, like, when you get it done, what do you do with it? We'll talk about conversations, but there's also this piece of, if it's in a drawer somewhere, it's not going to help you. So you got to get it to your doctor who gets it into the medical record so it's accessible.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Why don't people, in your experience, Dr. Vogel, why don't people sign up?
Well, I think people are busy, for one thing. I also think that, you know, talking about death or thinking about your future or something bad happened to you is kind of taboo. I started off in a career in the early 80s, and people didn't talk about death or sex, and now we talk about sex but not death, right? And so I think it's always this, it's not going to happen to me, and also, boy, if I get serious about doing this, maybe it will happen, right?
Oh, yeah, I suppose there's a bit of that. And probably just, I can put this off. I'm not dead yet,
yep.
So I can put it off. I'm sure a little bit of that goes in there as well. Well, we are really glad to have with us today Dr. Lee Vogel, Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health, and Ben Adams, Emeritus Director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, both founding members of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. We'll be continuing to talk with them right up until 12:30, but we need to take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. But I hope you'll join in now. Have you had some experience with this? In one way or another, good or bad, love to hear from you. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, and we'll be back right after this look at the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about advanced healthcare planning with two guests for you today. Dr. Lee Vogel, she is Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health. Ben Adams is Emeritus Director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. And they're both founding members of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. So as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. What questions or maybe experiences do you want to share about advanced care planning? You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Paul in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go there. Paul, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for this opportunity. I had an experience that I think others could maybe benefit from. I agreed to be the executor of my mother's estate. And when I died, I discovered that, you know, no matter how much money you have in life insurance or bank accounts or whatever, it all gets frozen. And it's a challenge to come up with the money to pay for the funeral due to the delay, and there's a specific form that you can fill out that gives the designated funeral parlor access to that money so that you don't have to personally pay for the funeral up front and then reimburse later. People can't always come up with $10,000 or $20,000 to pay for a funeral, even though you know you're going to get it back eventually.
Yeah.
So it's just one other planning step that, and I can't remember the name of the form, but maybe one of your guests know the name.
Probably has that. Ben, comment?
Yeah, I think Paul's point is well taken on the overall comprehensive pre-planning for things that are going to happen eventually in the future, either expected or unexpected. So planning ahead for your funeral, planning ahead for your finances for that time when they need to transition to someone else it should be an integral part of also doing your healthcare planning, which is the topic that we're trying to focus on today.
Yeah.
So, you know, Paul's arrangement could have been a little better or smoother if his parent had put aside the money in a funeral trust arrangement through the funeral home, for example.
Yeah, it's another, yes, for sure. Thank you, Paul, for calling. JP in Minong, we'll go to you next. Hi.
Hello. I'm actually was appointed the financial and health care directive for my mother after our father passed away a few years ago. It was a mess with six boys. We all six had, you know, well, three had one idea and three had another idea. And time can be of the essence. And sometimes, for instance, someone not in the know can say, yeah, let's do physical therapy, intense physical therapy, when it came to be that the physical therapy actually helped my dad pass away quicker. when hospice checked in. So having someone in the know that's really in touch with the nurses and doctors, because not the whole family isn't always in the know on all this stuff. So now for the mom, now we've got one person, myself, and we're going to, you know, that's going a lot better. She's actually going through some trouble right now. And if we had all six opinions, it would be a mess.
Oh, well, Dr. Vogel, a comment on that.
Yeah, I've been in the middle of those messes before, and it's heartbreaking because I think everybody in the room is motivated by love, but everybody might have a completely different concept, not only of what is best for mom or dad or a spouse or, a son or daughter, but also may not have any idea what the person wanted. And you're right about connecting with physicians, and we have a responsibility to be able to share what we think are the circumstances and the likelihoods of improvement and with what kinds of treatments. And it can be frankly miserable. And when there isn't somebody that knows and there isn't a document, you also may be finding that it is taken entirely out of the hands of family because we end up in a guardianship situation because we don't have those directives.
Hmm. And there are, I think, I want to go back to sooner versus later because I know of someone who wanted to work out a medical power of attorney and a power of attorney. And the person who they were working with, a family member, didn't trust them, were afraid they were going to lose all their ability to make any decisions and didn't want to participate in it, Dr. Vogel.
Yes, sooner is really important. Because if we get to a point where we can't participate in those decisions or we don't want to, then it's not helpful. I think the Bar Association has a document and a brochure for a family guiding them through, and I love the title of it. It's a gift to your family, which is basically thinking through this, having the conversations, and sometimes having the conversations is to express what you want, but it's also to clarify for yourself as you talk about your values and talk about. Sometimes it's a mom talking with children about the fact that when dad died, it was difficult. Let's figure this out together. So sooner is important. I do want to say one thing about as people develop memory problems or develop dementia, just because somebody has received that diagnosis doesn't automatically rule them out from actually contributing and completing a document. As long as they understand their values, they know who they would trust, and they want to complete one, you can have significant memory problem and still be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Maureen in Manitowoc, your turn now. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling because my mother passed away 2 years ago during the thick of COVID. But at age 93, she knew pretty well that she did not want to be resuscitated, that she had all of her paperwork signed and everything else. She lived in an independent living facility in the Milwaukee area. And when her caregiver came in and found her, and she had an individual home care person coming in mornings, found her on the floor. She had hit her head and she was barely breathing. And of course, this person followed her protocol, which was to call the facility, and an ambulance was called. And she probably tallied up another $30,000 in medical expenses before she finally really passed on Thursday. That was Monday morning. It was, family, they allowed three of us to be in her room at one time. By Tuesday, she seemed to have been just a little bit more lucid. And I said to my brother, you know, she really didn't want to die in a hospital. And he said, yeah, that's right. Well, he got on the phone, and he's a lawyer, so he quick got a hold of a hospice that could get her out of the hospital by Thursday. So Thursday at noon, she left the hospital, and Thursday night by midnight, she passed. And that really was more like what she had wanted. But when I think about it and all that involved, as far as all the paperwork for those hospice people and everything else, it was really more than necessary.
So maybe I have comments from both of you. Ben, let's start with you.
That's a really challenging set of circumstances that were just described. And I certainly have every sympathy for your mother and all of your family members that had to go through that with her. I'm not real sure what else she could have done. There is a legal document called a do not resuscitate order. It's not an advance directive. Technically, it's a physician's order that you can, and I should let Lee answer this instead of me, but I'm going to keep talking like I always do, Larry. The DNR order, do not resuscitate, can be given by a physician to a patient who's qualified to receive it because CPR would not give them relief, would not restore them to health. So it's not somebody who's healthy, but somebody who can't go through CPR successfully. But that may not even if mom had that in place in this circumstance, it wouldn't have mattered because mom was still breathing. It only takes effect if you stop breathing. And it's to avoid having them go through CPR-like procedures to restart your breathing again. Hmm. So it sounds like this family, mom had things pretty well decided and circumstances really intervened. So I guess I would throw this over to Lee Vogel and see if she has another comment.
Dr. Vogel?
Sure, yeah. And my sympathies to you and not only for your loss, but also in some ways, the first part of that was so difficult, but you pulled it together in the end to honor her wishes. Yes, a DNR bracelet is available and with a discussion with an individual and or somebody who is their acting authorized, activated power of attorney. And the conversation usually is around whether they are ill enough that they wouldn't benefit from CPR and all those extraordinary measures. And to basically, at the moment of one's death, when one's heart or breathing stops, allowing that to happen without intervention. And so wearing a bracelet, most people don't necessarily like the common bracelet, which just simply looks like a plastic armband from a hospital or a nursing home setting, but there is a legally authorized metal bracelet that can be used in Wisconsin too, and that's just a signal and a notification. And then, you know, backing all of that up are once again the conversations.
Yeah, Maureen, thank you again. Andrew in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. What do you do when the doctor doesn't want to go by the family's wishes? What happened to us is my dad had a heart attack in Phoenix. He wanted to get home to Minneapolis. we hired an air ambulance, but in order for the insurance company to pay for it, the doctor had to sign off on it, and we had to have a hospital on the receiving end for him to go to. We had everything set up except for the doctor's signature. Other doctors said, yeah, he'd be fine, you know, taking this air ambulance with a doctor and a nurse on board. Everything should have been fine. And eventually we did get him to convince him with a lawyer, but he didn't want to do it.
So what happens? And maybe I'll go to you, Dr. Bogle. What happens when the doctors may have different ideas from the family, so to speak?
Oh, my heart just sinks in these kinds of situations because I'd like my colleagues to be, you know, better at handling even unusual situations like this. We're just constantly faced with unusual situations and have to rise to the occasion with the best interest of the patient in mind and understanding what their wishes would be. It's always easier if there's a document. So I don't know if there was a document in this case that authorized a particular individual. The patient themselves, if they're still able to speak for themselves, should be able to say, yes, I want this. Sometimes it's helping the doctor understand that people are willing to accept certain risks. You did have to go all the way to finding an attorney. I do recommend that you reach out to a hospital ethics committee because an ethics committee can be quite helpful in helping to get past a logjam with a stubborn doctor's ideas.
Okay. Andrew, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Ellie in Eau Claire, we'll go to you. Hi, Ellie.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call, Larry. What I'm calling about, I was an ICU nurse, and several times I saw the advance directive, what the patient wanted to do as far as their death, overridden by family members who just did not want to lose that person. And I just want to emphasize that it's so important to talk to your family ahead of time. Let them know what your wishes are, and then you can discuss all of this before it becomes an emergency. Because it was heartbreaking to see my patient's wishes overridden by family members who did not want to see that patient die.
Ellie, thanks very much for calling. Ben, we haven't had you speak for a few minutes. I'll let you join in and then perhaps Dr. Vogel as well.
Sure. Thanks, Larry. And Ellie, that's a great point. I've certainly experienced that through several of my clients over the years that, you know, Larry, your point earlier of when should we do this? We should do it sooner. We should do it now before something happens and it's too late. Because, you know, if we get this in place, and then as Ellie and Dr. Vogel suggest along the way, don't keep it a secret. Don't take it and put it in the safe deposit box. Be sure that we get it out in the open. And sometimes family members will say, well, I don't want to tell so-and-so because they won't agree and they're sure to make trouble. Well, if we're going to have that difficulty, let's have it now up front while everybody can still communicate about it and not have them come in from left field at the end when somebody's going through a medical crisis and have to make that process so much harder.
Yeah. Dr. Vogel?
Yeah, I do have something to say about that. This is not uncommon because oftentimes it really is the final point of recognizing that the person you love is leaving. And people deal with that in a lot of different ways, but a very common way is to want to hang on, to want to do more. And we live in a society where you watch on television, somebody has a bad illness, a bad outcome from a surgery, a bad infection that didn't get treated in time, an automobile accident. And in 1 minute, they're in a bad situation. And the next minute, they've awakened, they have their lipstick on, and they are out of the ICU. So we have this overly high expectations of what medicine can do. And I usually try to meet patients and families in that circumstance by just saying, I think one thing we can all agree on is that we love this person. You love this person. You want them around longer. Let's talk about the reality of that. But let's also talk and emphasize about what their wishes were.
Yeah. Let's go to Jessica in Green Bay next. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. Thanks so much for having this topic. I think it's so important. I'm 46 years old, and I just completed my power of attorney for healthcare and advance directive last night and had my witnesses sign it. I have named my agent, and the person who would fill in for my agent if my husband was my agent wasn't available. But I just wanted to stress how important it is to not wait until we get older to fill this out. I mean, it's something that everyone should do as soon as they turn 18, to make sure that those wishes are documented and in place, have those conversations, and then make sure that you are updating that documentation periodically or definitely at any major life change. I'm going to set a reminder for myself to update mine when my kids turn 18 so that they can become secondary and tertiary agents if my husband is unable to fill that role for me.
Mm. Jessica, thanks. Ben, you're on board.
Jessica, you're preaching to the choir when Lee and I are nodding our heads along with Larry to hear you say that. All of what she said is absolutely critical. Because an 18-year-old or a 30-year-old's wishes are not going to be the same if they're my age in their 70s and they've started to develop some health issues. So we do need to keep these things refreshed. Larry, I would give a shout out to one of the other documents that's on your webpage for the show, the healthcare planning guide that's available free right now from the State Bar of Wisconsin called A Gift to Your Family. I would encourage people to go to your website and download that free download. It's available until April 24th, and make copies of that for your family members. The documents are in there. Questions and how to discuss these issues with your agents are there, and lots of resources to get this process either started or completed.
Yeah, and just go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry. I mean, many people are familiar with that. Ideas@wpr.org/Larry, go to today's date, and you will see, under program notes, you will see all of this information. This is great information, the forms, the whole works that will get you on the right track if you're not there already. And just quickly, Kathy from De Pere says she recently took over from her mother to be guardian of her Down syndrome brother. Does a guardianship designee cover medical issues, Ben?
Yes, normally it does. Like what we've been talking about, Larry, the advance planning, you would set up a separate document for financial and a separate document for healthcare. Guardianship works similarly. A person can be appointed to be just the financial guardian or just the healthcare guardian or both. And sometimes one person is appointed for financial and a different person's appointed for secondary, for the healthcare side.
For healthcare. Or it could be the same. And those could be changed, right?
They can be changed if a guardian dies or resigns or becomes unsuitable. But all of that changeable stuff in guardianship has to go through the court process in order to make any adjustments.
And on that note, I want to thank you both very much for taking some time to be with us today. I'm hoping that we get a lot of attention on the Larry Mueller Show page as people go there and download that information that's free for the next several days. Dr. Vogel, Dr. Lee Vogel, thank you so much. Ben Adams, thank you as well.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, everyone.
Dr. Lee Vogel, Executive Director of the Mosaic Family Health. Ben Adams, Emeritus Director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. Go to our website. Go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry. And today's date, and go to the program notes, and you're going to find all those downloads, and you can do that, and you're going to be helping yourself and a lot of family members if you do that. So please do it. Take my advice. And listen tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show. We're taking a look. The bird population is declining, and there's a new book on about how people are searching for the solutions. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.